Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In studio every Friday, 5:30, it is former Oregon Duck, Joey Harrington, and we were just talking off the air about, we were reminiscing a little bit about 2001 and the Oregon team that clobbered Colorado.
Should have played for a national championship.
Yeah, so the national champion was Miami, and they hammered Nebraska. We remember that whole scenario. Yeah. But Joey was going through, and I want you to do
not
this
that
on,
I remember this at all. You know,
yeah, right.
Not that it's ingrained in my mind.
Quite vivid. You got to do this on the air. Go through that Miami team, that championship team that you guys didn't get to play.
Right.
But who all did they have?
Well, Kenny Dorsey was a quarterback who, won 30...
Something like that.
30-some games
at the time,
in a row.
I think it was a record. McCarron may have ended up breaking it.
It was incredible. But at tight end, it was Jeremy Shockey, backed up by Kellen Winslow Jr., backed up by Buck Ortega, backed up by Greg Olson. Wideout, actually, they just lost Santana Moss, so Andre Johnson was the only first-round wideout that they had. But only. Tailback was Clinton Portis, backed up by Willis McGahee, backed up by Jared Payton. And the only reason those guys were playing is because Frank Gore tore his ACL in camp that year. He was a freshman. It was supposed to. They had two first-rounders at offensive tackles, Joaquin Gonzalez and Vernon Carey. And I know I'm forgetting somebody
Bryant
else
McKinney,
there. Bryant
McKinney, I think, was on that team.
Bryant McKinney,
as well.
That's who it was. Bryant McKinney, yes.
Who would go on to the Vikings. Star in the Love Boat episode of the
and
Minnesota
the Vikings.
Vikings.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
Defense was Jonathan. It wasn't Jonathan. Who was the Joseph defensive tackle? Because they had Jonathan Joseph at corner, but there was another Joseph at D tackle.
Yeah, it was a Joseph at D tackle.
Vince Wilfork backed up Jerome McDougal.
Yeah.
Because Jerome was Stockers McDougal's younger brother. So Vince Wilfork was a backup. And then they had DJ Vilma and Jonathan Vilma and DJ Williams at linebacker. And then the corners were Mike Rumpf and Jonathan Joseph, backed up by Antrell Roll and Philip Buchanan. Ed Reed at safety,
God,
who was backed up by Sean Taylor.
God.
And by the way, there's lots of other guys that are like ancillary. Like I played with a guy
in
Tampa.
A sixth round pick.
Like Nate Webster, I played with in Tampa. He was a third or fourth round pick. He was a linebacker on that team. Those are just like the first two round guys. There's that roster was littered with guys that were drafted again, like in the third, fourth, fifth round that no one ever knows because they weren't first round picks.
We had six guys drafted off that team. It was me, Maurice Morris, Justin Peel, Wes Mallard, Steve Smith, and Rashad Bowman. They had six players drafted in the first round. And then Clinton Portis was the first pick of the second round. Like that's how good and that's how deep that team was.
I always say like it's either to me the Nebraska team, the Tommy Frazier team, and you look at that defense with Jared Tolmich and Christian Peter and those guys, and it's either that or that Miami team is the best college team I've ever seen with my own two eyes. But in all honesty, like you take the pride out of it, you guys play Miami there.
I always
think you had a shot?
I always say if we play that game once, which you do, it's always a coin flip, right?
Sure.
You know, just like the same thing that happened the following year, Ohio State beat them.
Yeah, you got a shot.
Essentially, they beat almost that exact same team.
Yeah.
If we play them 10 times, I think we win two or three. I mean, they were that good. As good as our 01 team was, and we were one of the best teams, and I might argue, since none of the teams have won a national championship, I would argue that we're still one of, if not the best team in the history of Oregon football, that 01 team. I think we beat them 2 out of 10 times. Like that's how good that Miami team was.
That Miami team should have won 3 national titles because the year before they won it, they should have gotten to play. They beat number 1 and number 3, and yet somehow the BCS put them out of the
BCS made a mistake? No.
That was the year I think it was Florida State and
never
Virginia
experienced
Tech.
That before.
And they went and played Florida like in the Sugar Bowl and just murdered Florida. Then they won a national title, and they would have won it that year, by the way, had they been allowed to play in it. Then they won it the year after that, and then they had the Ohio State year where it was won, and then you had the mystery flag in the corner with the pass interference. But it's kind of unbelievable that team only won one national title, considering maybe the greatest collection of talent we've seen in college football maybe ever.
But hey, you had your moment. You clobbered Colorado.
There we go. It happened.
So that game, going into that game, you guys were pissed. But this
a little bit.
This sort of feels like a fan narrative. Like, you know, fans like, oh, they're going to be so mad, and that Colorado was a tough team, and you guys had a great game. But did you know going into that game you had a really good chance to do that to them?
Yeah, we were a really, really good football team. Yep. Like that's the fact of the matter, is we were a better team than Nebraska that year. Yep. We were, you know, clearly the second best team in the country, and we had a shot to beat the best team in the country. I mean, I don't think that, you know, us in Miami, 1-2, the difference between Nebraska, Colorado at 3-4, I think it was a much
going in.
Not going in, and we prepared that way, but we knew that we were one of the two best teams in the country.
Interesting.
You know, it's some people are going to kind of listen to that if you're not a Duck fan, and people roll their eyes. There's this stigma that somehow a West Coast team that isn't named USC can't be one of those teams. You know, I said that about Washington a couple years ago when they went down and played in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And obviously they came up short. You know, I think they're without an elite player or two. I think quarterback limited them. I always said, like, if they had a Justin Herbert level talent at UW right now, to me, that's a national title contending team. But I do think there is a stigma out here that we don't give credit, whether it's Oregon, whether it's Stanford, whether it's Washington. The only one that we'll give any credit to on a national basis is USC, to say that that's a team that really can be one of the top two teams in the country. And it's a shame, because there's some really good football that gets played out here on the West Coast. Maybe not as often.
Agreed.
As in the South, but they do happen.
Yes, but it doesn't happen just out of happenstance. So that narrative doesn't happen. Washington lost to Auburn.
Yeah.
They played them really well, but they lost to Auburn. When Oregon went down to Dallas a few years ago, they lost to LSU. Yep. When Oregon played Ohio State in the national championship, they lost to them. When Washington played Alabama, they lost. Like, yes, there's really good football being played out here, but when you have those opportunities to make an impression on the rest of the country, USC is the only team that has truly done that in the last, what, 2 decades?
Yeah, at least.
So I understand where the narrative comes from. Now, we don't have time to get into the whole, you know, the whole thing. But when you have your opportunity, you need to take advantage.
Well, just look at the Miami team you just mentioned. Like, that season leaves a good and bad taste in your mouth, but a really good taste in your mouth because you clobbered Colorado and it right. validated how good you were. But at the same time, you just listed off that team. Chances are, you guys weren't beating that team, right?
Well, we would beat them.
So there you go. So you get like to these level, you get to the very, very top, but then it just seems like out West, that West Coast team is never that one, because there's only one that can be crowned. It's never that one team.
It would have been us.
If you guys had the upfront, because to me, that's what separates it. When I look at those USC teams, and we'll point to Reggie Bush and we'll point to Matt Leinart and, you know, the ridiculous number of players they had, you know, Mike Williams and all the, you know, the tight ends. But when I look at those USC teams that won national championships and were, you know, thumped in Auburn, thumped in Oklahoma, were able to go into those games and prove it, what we don't seem to remember about USC is that from a defensive standpoint in the front seven, and you look at their offensive lineman that they put out, that was first rounder after mm-hmm. first rounder after first rounder. When Washington was really good and won a national title in the 90s,
it was Steve Ettman,
it was Bob Sapp, and mm-hmm. it was Olin Krutz,
it was Lincoln Kennedy,
it was these guys. And so that, to me, and I look at like this version of USC, same thing, it's soft, and it has been soft. So to me, if you want to get a West Coast team that is going to kind of crack that glass ceiling, you know, we get all hyped about quarterbacks and receivers and all that. I have no doubt that the skill position players on the West Coast are as good as anyone in the country. But to me, where that glass ceiling has always resided is the guys up front.
I think that's a fair argument. I mean, you look at the one person there. If there's one person that I think changed the fortunes of the Auburn-Oregon championship
game, Fairley?
Nick Fairley.
They couldn't
yep.
block him.
Yep.
Not with two guys. I've talked to Carson York mm-hmm. about it, and he was better than anyone else on that field.
Yep.
Cam Newton was amazing,
yep.
and Oregon neutralized him.
Yep.
Oregon's defense was good enough to beat Cam Newton, but their offense wasn't good enough to beat Nick Fairley.
Yep.
So they got to get more of those guys.
You just gotta grow them. You know, just
grow them.
Just grow them. You know, it's just like magic.
I remember Chip always saying that. Yeah. It's like, they don't grow on trees, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, after the LSU game, someone was asking him about size and speed, and he goes, I don't recruit small, fast guys. He goes, I just can't find big, fast guys. I'd like to get them. If you want to send them up to Eugene.
Well, they do kind of grow them in the South, which is part of why.
It's a hotbed of talent. It's hard to get those guys. But you wonder with some of the national recruiting now that's going on, it seems more national than ever on the West Coast. And you see like what Oregon's doing right now with their recruiting class, and you're seeing some of these guys up front, you know, the Penei Sewells and guys like this that are 4- and 5-star, you're not really 5-stars, offensive linemen very rarely are, but you're starting to see some bigger name guys from the South and from the East that are coming here, and you wonder if maybe that, you know, looking into the future. Washington has done it with the Vita Veas and the Greg Gaines and you know, the Trey Adams and some of their lines that they're building. You know, they've done it up there at Stanford.
I'm gonna let you handle the recruiting stuff. I'm gonna stay out of that mess.
So Joe Harrington's gonna join us every Friday at 5:30. I want to pivot. Let's take a break, and when we come back, I'd like to get your opinion on what these rookie quarterbacks are going through in the NFL. Josh Allen's getting his first start, and we've seen Sam Darnold. So we'll do that with Joey coming up next here on 1080 The Fan. All right, we're back live. Joey Harrington in studio. Let's pivot to the NFL because Sam Darnold has started a game as a rookie.
Sam Bradford started a game too. That's also big news. You know, he's on the field.
He's still upright.
Someone will give him another chance and another chance and another chance.
So then there's Josh Allen who's getting his first start. What are these guys going through? Like, what's the hardest part of being a rookie and a prized rookie quarterback in the NFL?
Being expected to produce without, but you don't know what you don't know. Like the story I always tell is we were playing the Raiders. It was either my rookie year or my second year. And Rod Woodson was at the end of his career, you know, a Hall of Famer, corner for the Ravens. And then at the end of the career, you know, he moved to safety. And I get up under center. I know exactly the coverage. I know what he's doing. I know where he's going to be. I know my route. I take snap, look it off, come back, throw it over, steps in front. He picks it off. I go up to him after the game and I say, okay, give me some knowledge. Like, tell me what I do. Did I tip it off? Was I looking? My receiver split too tight? What was going on? He said, no, I've just seen that route every single day in practice for the last 14 years, and a rookie was not going to beat me on it. And that's the difference, is you talk about the speed of the game. It's not that guys are faster physically. It's not like they're running 4-4 instead of 4-5. If anything, a lot of those guys slow down a little bit. You may be a 4-4, 4-5 guy in college. Now you're a 4-5, 4-6 guy in the NFL. But it's that mental, it's just taken 10,000 mental reps. So that when you see the receivers take their release and you've done it so many times, it's like, okay, I know that as a defender, these guys can only go here. And so I can therefore X out this part of the field and I'm going to focus here. And so as a rookie, to try and combat against that defender who's done it over and over and over and over and essentially knows where you're going to go before you do, you have to be so precise that it truly leaves no room for error. Like, you watch a guy like Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, they look so fluid because they've done it so many times, right? It's just second nature. It's just, okay, yeah, I can look it off over here, whap, come back, because I know where he's going to be. When you're a rookie, you just don't know it yet. And there's no substitute for simply getting out and doing it.
So that's interesting. So does that mean that it's better to be Baker Mayfield right now sitting and watching, or is it better to be Josh Allen, who's kind of getting thrown to the wolves?
Josh Allen's getting thrown to the wolves.
That's a bad team.
It is. It reminds me a little bit of my situation in Detroit, where I didn't start the first two games of the season and we got our teeth kicked in. And then they called me. I remember I was sitting at home watching Jeopardy and Marty Morningweg called and he's like, hey, come on in. We got to talk. And so I started the next week.
Who was the starter?
Who was prior? It was Mike McMahon.
Oh, okay.
My first start was against the Saints at home. No, excuse me. Sorry. No, the Packers at home. First win was the next week against the Saints at home. First start against Brett Favre. Mm. I think I threw four picks, maybe three. I would, from my own experience, rather be Baker Mayfield. But that's just me, because I was more of a cerebral guy. I was the guy who beat you with a game plan. I outthought you because I wasn't fast. I wasn't, I wasn't elusive in the pocket. I look at a guy like Carson Palmer. Carson sat for a year. I look at Eli Manning. Eli sat for a good 10, 12 games with Kurt Warner ahead of him.
Roger sat for three.
Exactly. I mean, there's something to be said for that. Now, a lot of guys are ready to play right away, or more ready to play because of the evolution of the game of football. And the things that we were doing in college in terms of weight training and film study, guys a few years later were doing in high school. And now they're doing it in middle school. Guys are doing more younger, so that when they get to the point that they're a rookie in the NFL, they have had more mental reps than we had coming in. Would I rather be Baker Mayfield right now? Yeah,
so
I would.
So you can study.
So I can study. Well, so I could know.
I think young quarterbacks, too, can get ruined. I look at what happened with Carr in Houston.
You
look
77 at sacks.
Yeah. I mean, and he just comes out and says it. Like, he goes, look, by the end of my first year, he goes, all I did when I took a snap was wait to get hit.
Yeah.
And you feel it. You're, Tim Couch had some of this. And, you can go through all
the guys sitting to your left has. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. There's something to be said for playing early. Let's take a guy like Dak Prescott, right? And there's some question whether or not Dak's a franchise guy or not. But Dak comes in and plays behind arguably the best offensive line in football,
right,
and plays with a big time NFL Hall of Fame tight end, good receiver, and a good back, and he looks really good.
Yeah.
How many guys can come in that situation? And the elite ones will find a way to be elite, but I wonder how many guys could end up being good to very good that are ruined early by playing on bad football teams.
I would say that the majority. There are very, very few truly. You said the elite guys will be elite. Yep. Yeah. Peyton Manning.
Yeah. Andrew Luck came in on a bad Colts team and they win 9 games and they're not going to win a Super Bowl, but Andrew Luck was good enough to take a bad football team and make it good, maybe will it to the playoffs, but that's a generational quarterback.
But I was going to say the majority of guys who come into the league are not elite, right? And there are 100 guys, 32 teams, 3 guys per, let's call it 100 guys out there that can make every single throw on the field. They can do everything you need to do as an NFL quarterback. And what determines success or failure is who they're surrounded with. I mean, look at Ben Roethlisberger when he came in as a rookie.
Yeah.
He came in with Jerome Bettis at tailback and a defense that allowed nothing. He threw the ball more than, I think he only had 2 games as a rookie where he threw the ball more than 20 times. We'll look it up in the break or something like that. And those are the games that he lost. He was throwing the ball 17, 18 times a game because that helped him build his confidence. And that is all it is about. As a quarterback, it is purely confidence. It's having the ability to trust what you see and cut it loose. Because, like I said, everybody can make the throw, but it's whether you make the throw now or now. And if you make it now, then it's a touchdown. If you make it now, it's an interception.
I always say
that's the difference, is just a fraction of a second, a fraction of a second of hesitation.
I always said that, in my brief window there, when I was, getting my teeth kicked in, when you guessed, even if you guessed right, you were wrong.
Yep.
Because that split second of, hey, am I doing this correct? Even if I was guessing the right way, I still
wouldn't commit to it.
I didn't commit to it. And you still ended up getting beat. And that to me was always the difference of knowing, of being confident when you made an offensive line call to slide something, or you decide to throw the football, or hey, this is going to be cover 2 versus whatever.
But it's a cycle that builds on itself, right? So you get out there and you throw it, you throw that first interception, and do you have the support around you to know that it's going to be okay, or do you doubt that next throw? And for those of us, the David Carrs, the Tim Couches, myself, We doubted that next throw. So what happens is you throw the interception the first time, and the second time you come back and throw that same route, you hesitate just a millisecond. And it may be open when you throw it, but by the time you hesitate, it gets intercepted again. So then you doubt it again. And then you start to doubt yourself, doubt your abilities, doubt whether you can actually make those throws that you know you can and you do every single day in practice. It's not about a physical thing for Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen. I'm forgetting one of the new guys this year.
Lamar Jackson's in there, yeah, but he's a first rounder.
I mean, it truly is what's in between the ears. And it's not a smarts thing, but do you believe in yourself to make every throw at the right time? And if and when it doesn't work, do you have enough confidence to come back and throw it again at the same time?
Well, and do you have a defense, too, that takes your interception and turn it into a three and out and gives you the ball back? You mentioned Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger was inessential in the first Super Bowl, and then when they won the second one, Roethlisberger had a huge deal.
He was the reason,
it.
Right.
Russell Wilson was the same way. If you go back and look at Russell Wilson when he was a rookie, boy, they kept the training wheels on him for 12 weeks, and Russell Wilson was not very good. But again, he had a run game, and he had a defense that even when he did screw up, always bailed him out, and then eventually the training wheels came off, and Russell Wilson has developed into an all-pro quarterback. And so you look at that, and it's also being able to have a team that can make your mistakes not killers, because I'm assuming there's a huge difference between throwing a pick and then three or four plays later having them put it in the end zone and being like, God, we're down 7-0 versus, hey, I threw a pick and three plays later I got the ball back again at the 25. And hey, it's fine. It's going
to
be okay.
Well, so which team is going to afford that to their rookie quarterback? It's not going to be the Bills.
No,
it's not going to be Josh Allen. When Josh Allen throws that pick, it's going to turn into seven.
Yeah.
Is it Sam Darnold? And the defense looked pretty dang good against Detroit.
Yeah.
That's what you got to factor into being a rookie quarterback.
Well, we're out of time. Joey's going to join us at 5:30 every Friday. Good discussion today. So what goes on at the Harrington household on a Friday night? What's like a typical Friday night look like there?
You know what's happening tonight?
Dance party.
House music.
White guy dance party.
No, we're going to the doubleheader out at the University of Portland. Men's and women's soccer team.
Okay.
The women are playing the Ducks, and the men are playing the Huskies.
Cool.
UP men's soccer ranked in the top 20 right now.
All right.
There you go. My wife is a pilot.
All right.
Is she a pilot?
Go Pilots.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That's right.
So when the Ducks come to town, you said they're playing Oregon.
I know. The women are playing Oregon today.
The Harrington family split.
It's a divided household.
How old are your kids now?
Fourth grade and first grade.
Okay. They're still littles.
Do they have any idea who their dad is?
Yes-ish. My youngest, we were in a situation the other day when, I introduced myself, hey, how are you doing? I'm Joey. Yeah. Good to meet you. And, my youngest walks up to him and says, yeah, my dad's famous. It's like, stop. No. You don't even know what you're, yeah, but he's famous. I was like, okay. Stop.
Great to see you. Thank you.
Thanks guys.
And we'll talk to Joey Harrington again, next Friday, 5:30. The club is next. Tony Starlight in studio on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.